Welcome to Film Wax Radio, the independent film talk show. Every week we're visited by filmmakers, actors, programmers, journalists, and others to sit down and chat about the state of independent film. Now going into its 20th season. The South by Southwest Film Festival will be running from March 8th through the 16th in Austin, Texas. You may still be able to purchase a badge for the festival or certainly individual tickets by visiting sxsw.com/film. And I'm really excited to welcome on for the first time on Filmwax Radio the producer of the South by Southwest Film Festival. Janet Pearson is calling in and I'm very excited. Janet is responsible for the vision, programming, and execution of the annual film festival. Before joining South by Southwest in April of 2008, Janet spent over 30 years championing independent film and filmmakers in a variety of roles, including distributor, exhibitor, producer's rep, investor, workshop producer, executive producer, on and on. Much of her work has been in partnership with her husband, author, producer, professor, and co-president of Grainy Pictures, John Pearson. I welcome Janet Pearson to Film Wax Radio. Hi, Janet. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Thanks so much again for coming on.
All right.
Got my ticket. Got my badge will be there, and I'm very excited about this season.
It's always interesting to me what actually jumps out. Like, I'm excited. You know, we've been living with this stuff for quite a while and making really hard decisions, and I'm always really interested in what looks good to you.
Let's see. Whenever I see, like, a friend as a film, for instance, that's always kind of exciting on a personal level. And also, what's exciting is always hearing about these number of films that are in the works from returning filmmakers like Shane Ruth and Matt Porterfield, certainly.
We're not actually showing Matt's film.
Oh, that's why I'm not excited about it. Disregard.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful film. I love it. I'm a big fan of the film. Matt's film brings up a good point. I love the film. I used to be darker. It's just an exquisite, wonderful film. And the thing is, we aim to show about 14 films from the Sundance lineup, which is a generous amount. It's about 10% of their program, and it would be 10% of our program. And then they've already pre-curated and looked at so many films. You know, there's 100 we could show, and we're lucky in that so many of the filmmakers who premiere at Sundance also know what a different great opportunity South by Southwest is and would love to be here as well. But we have to limit it to 14.
Right.
And the choices are always hard, and this year with so many Texas films of filmmakers that we think are great and we've been following for a while, and, you know, we don't show everything from Texas. I mean, we probably had about 46 films submitted from Austin alone that were feature films this year. You know, we're showing a fraction of them as well. But it's this year that the Texas films at Sundance were spectacular, so we just ran out of room very quickly. I mean, so a film like I Used to Be Darker, I love, I think it's great, there's no room to show it. And I could say that about a lot of films in the Sundance lineup.
Yeah, no, I'm certain of it, and I apologize for that gaffe.
It's a good point, because people are always confused. They think, if I'm in Sundance, can I apply to South by Southwest? Like, yeah, but you should. You should apply to us by our deadline in mid-November.
Right.
And then, you know, we do make space to show some of them, and we highlight the ones we show in a big way. And this year I was committed to 12 films before I even went to Sundance. I knew what they were, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's so many moving parts. Describe what that looks like to an average person who doesn't know what goes into programming a festival the size and the breadth of South by Southwest Film Fest.
There are a lot of different moving parts, but we're lucky in that we are part of South by Southwest, which is an organization that started in 1987. It started to be a music event.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there are things in place that we just grew out of. There's a registration department. There's a tech department. There's an department.
The infrastructure.
There's an infrastructure. And if the film team is incredibly small, the film team is about 8 or 9 of us, I think. And that includes a person that does the marketing and sales for trade show and, you know, the lounges and parties and kind of, you know, very specifically sales opportunities, marketing opportunities within the event. Person dedicated specifically to all the tech running the show, you know, in terms of these days, it's very mm-hmm. complicated with all the different formats involved in building the venues. One person handles the press as well as does programming. Somebody else does web content. We all kind of have day jobs on top of our programming that we do as well. And we are producing the event as well as programming. So we don't have separate event producers on the film side, but we are buoyed by the rest of the mm-hmm. company, which, you know, I mean, there's a the tech needs of the company are extensive. We have all our own submission system. We don't use without a box. We have our own submission system. We have our own badging system. We have our own, you know, database system that's all tied together.
How does that work to your advantage to build something like that on your own? Is it just more of a financial decision, or are there, like you say, you have your own sort of customized submission process?
Well, I just, you know, I mean, I've been here, I started working here in 2008, and the South by Southwest film started in 1994, and South by Southwest music started in 1987, so, you know, it's not for me to go back and sort of talk about how it evolved.
Sure.
It evolved the way it evolved, you know, but I think that, you know, it's just been customized and streamlined, and there's a way that we are not a standalone film festival. We're a film festival that's joined at the hip with one of the largest music and interactive conferences in the world. You know, and so mm-hmm. there are things that are unique about that, and there are things that make it different than other places, and so it's just the way it is.
What are the types of things that you have maybe brought to the festival in your tenure so far? You know, or talk about maybe how you are able to keep an ear to the ground for the kinds of things that are going on in the independent film world and the festival film world, and you know, how that plays into your growing the festival, not just necessarily in size, but maybe just in terms of the brand of South by Southwest.
Well, sure. I used to come down with my husband, John Pearson. We worked together for years, and he was an extremely famous producer's rep and an author, and we had a television show, and We started coming down early on because we had a relationship with Richard Linklater, and any excuse to come to Austin was a good one. And, you know, we liked South by Southwest, and we used to come down here. And we moved to Austin from New York, where we lived. We moved to Austin in 2004, partly because we liked South by Southwest a lot. My husband wanted to teach at the university, and I wasn't quite sure what I would do. But we knew we liked the Austin Film Society a lot, and I got mm-hmm. very involved. And I was very close to the predecessor, the person who was running South by Southwest Film at the time, was Matt Deffler, a young person who was kind of extraordinary. And I liked what the festival was, and I became a volunteer screener. And when Matt decided to move to New York in 2008, I was asked to step in and take over. And I think what happened was that I was already a fan of everything that the festival was doing. I liked the really DIY films. I liked the comedies. I liked, you know, there was a real broad range of the kind of films it was
yes.
showing that really aligned with my sensibility. But when I brought it, I've been involved with independent films since the late 70s. So, and I've been involved with distribution and exhibition and as a producer's rep and television show. I've really been kind of a film champion for decades.
Yeah.
So what I brought was kind of a passion for it. It's been my whole life. It's what I care about. I'm a champion by nature. So I get excited about things, and my instinct is to help. And when I see people that are talented, if I see, you know, and it's funny because it could be a talented filmmaker, a talented actor, but it could also be talented people like on my staff, you know.
Sure.
I was able to hire, our shorts programmer is a young woman that I was able to hire right after she graduated from UT, and working with her the last 4 years has been extraordinary to watch her growth and her really blossoming on so many levels. Like mm-hmm. every day she comes into work making things better for everybody else, and as a shorts programmer, her taste is fantastic. So that's just exciting to me, as discovering work that I think is exciting.
Well, that's great. That's a great answer. So being able to identify, spotting talent, because you see somebody who is as passionate in the way maybe you are and the way you've described yourself, finding passionate lovers of cinema is a good starting point, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I just focus on things I connect to, and mm-hmm. I, you know, kind of like to come work from a place of generosity. I like to, you know, sort of help people I think are interesting or talented, and
right.
If I'm excited about something, then I assume other people might be excited about that as well, and, you know, so that's at the core of what we do here, and we have this great little team. I love the people I work with every day. Mm-hmm. As I said, there are like 8 or 9 of us, and, you know, they all bring something very unique to the table, and I have so much respect for them. And when we're all, like right now, we're all, you know, working incredibly hard, and each one of them is doing things that I can't do, and I'm so grateful for that. But, you know, we also together we're able to kind of have this platform where we all are very proud of the work and proud of what we're able to do and how well it's working. So mm-hmm. it's nice feedback loop.
It also shows in the having been to the festival now, I know a lot of the filmmakers, and there's a level of loyalty and of excitement among that whole community of people, and I would say that's a good way of sort of gauging how good a job you guys are doing, or one way.
Well, that's, It's interesting we say loyalty. I mean, we certainly love the fact that people want to be here and love it here and have a great time here. I mean, that's the essence. You know, that's what you want. It's got to be. We're not the easiest festival. We don't fly people in. We don't pay for them. We don't put them up. You know, there are challenges involved with that. The fact that people know how significant of an experience it is, mm-hmm. that great things happen here on all sorts of emotional, psychological, and economic levels, which is great. But it's interesting when you bring up loyalty because sure. you know, every year if we're showing 120, 130 features and maybe 130 shorts, there's always this, every year there are more alums. And every year there are more new people.
Right.
You know, and it's always, and it can be really painful for people when they sort of assume that, and people seem to be making more films often.
Yeah.
Yeah, more often. Thank you. So, you know, so I'm sure that this year, as every year, there are people have been like, well, what do you mean you're not showing my film this year? I love you. You have an experience there. And I'm like, I love you too. This year, it's not going to work out for your film, you know?
Sure.
And
well,
it's painful as the relationships develop. You never like saying no to people that you think are great, but there's a lot of lovely people, and there's only so many slots for film.
Well, being a programmer and doing something like this, you're in a position of rejecting. It must be difficult, and it probably never gets that much easier. But if I'm a filmmaker, Janet, and I'm making lots of films and increasing the number because of maybe there's more of a fly, sort of just that sort of sense of... of energy and momentum going, and everybody's helping on each other's films now. And but you're also realizing, you know, you must have be somewhat rational, knowing that not every single film is going to get in the same festival. I guess also what I meant by loyalty is that you don't hear the complaints and the sort of the talking out of the side of your mouth that you get in other festivals about, you know, the similar things. I mean, I think it's just. It's not uncommon for people just to find something to complain about. I just haven't heard it in South by Southwest.
That's great.
Yeah. just thought I'd mention. But I see, but you do see certain names that pop up and certain films, you know, that are in the season, for instance, of people. I would certainly love to talk about some of this year's highlights without in any way suggest there still are quite a few names of returning folks. We could also just talk about some of the things that maybe you're excited about, some of these highlights, without in any way suggesting that these are favorites. It's just sort of things to look forward to, or maybe things that are new that that come to mind. If there's anything you can think of.
I find that so hard. You know, I'm very invested in the 130. I think it's about 130 features we're up to now. We announced 110, but Midnights are going to be announced this week, and then we have some late additions coming in. And you know, I get extremely invested in all of it.
It's understandable.
If I mention one film, then all of a sudden all the other films start being, what about me? What about me? You know? So, I mean, I just think it's a cool program. And I've been finding, as I've been talking to people in conversation, mm-hmm. you know, certain things just keep coming up, like will come up organically. Because so many of the films we show have kind of a cultural resonance or, you know, they're just sort of stories about outside the norm. I mean, I keep finding myself talking about Maiden Trip for some reason, which is a film about this 14-year-old kid who sails around the world by herself.
Well, that's...
How extraordinary is that?
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, they're all interesting for all different reasons.
Right.
And what I like, too, is the way they play off of each other. Like, there's a lot of... Nobody's seeing as many of the films as I am in one setting at one time, but you know, there's almost like some of the films resonate with each other, and they kind of like...
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to single out the films in competition, so I can't even talk about it further. But, you know, there's certain films that partly what they're about resonates with another film from a slightly different angle.
Yes.
And this year there's actually a bunch of LGBT films, which is not an area we, you know, had of an intensive focus on particularly. There's no quota or, you know, it just we ended up this year with really a number of films that all address the subject from really different viewpoints. Like Continental is about the Continental Club, VAS, which is this amazing, amazing institution in New York, you know, and a cultural focus point. And, you know, but then something like Before You Know It, which is about aging, these three aging gay mm-hmm. men, sort of, well, the Continental would have been a moment in their life that they might have gone to if they were in New York or not, or traveled to it. You know, I mean, it's, I'm not being very articulate here, but there are ways that they interplay with each other.
I understand.
Pretty interesting. So
during the process of a programming a season, one of the more interesting that kind of things that happen, whether it's usually it sounds more incidental, is that certain themes emerge sort of organically.
Yeah, yeah. Like one year, a couple of years ago, there were like 7 films on addiction. And then one year, there was like, you know, some years they're much heavier music films. And last year, there was just so much stuff in the woods. Like everything was in the woods. It was so funny, you know? And I mean, you see certain trends where people are shooting films in the woods because they don't have any budgets and where can you shoot? You know, so you've got films around a dinner table, you've got film in the woods. But so it's interesting how these trends emerge. Like this year for the LBGT films, in the last 5 years, this hasn't happened before. You know, it was just a spontaneous number of films that all sort of were really spoke to us and were good. I mean, there's the film on Divine. It's just wonderful, you know.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
It's just interesting, you know, or some years, it's just funny how these resonances emerge. This year, there's a little bit of some theater, some films that have to do with theater and adaptation. But, you know, there's always, we're not conscious about it. When we're looking at each film singly, and we're looking for films that move us, and then the picture emerges later.
Right. Well, there isn't.
You know, and the picture mm-hmm. should just be that they're all interesting, good films.
Absolutely. They speak for themselves. This is Adam Chartoff, host of FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show, Wednesday nights, 6:30 to 7:30 on bboxradio.com. And, well, there is a segment, for instance, called Festival Favorites. So that, I guess, was one area that I'm looking at this list, and it's just remarkable. You have a film which I've seen called The Act of Killing, which is a stunning film.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
It is.
That film is one of the most knockout films I've seen ever.
It's an unforgettable experience. You know, you don't say that, you're not able to say that a lot, but with this film, this documentary, and then you have a teacher, Hannah Fadel's film. I've been hearing a lot about that. And,
it was shot here in Austin, actually.
Yeah.
Place in Austin.
Right. Oh, yes.
Film. Yeah. This is sort of, what I love about a film like that is it has, its ambitions are clear and simple. I mean, I'd say that in the most positive way. It was like the film Weekend that we showed a number of years ago.
Perfect
film.
Beautiful film.
So a teacher is sort of a film in that vein where it's not, you know, it's not about generations of something. It's not about, you know, it's not all the place. It's a simple moment. It's a simple story, and it's so incredibly beautifully realized for what it is. I feel the same way about Pit Stop. It has a real elegance to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful, and it's sort of on its own terms. It's fully realized in a very almost humble but beautiful way.
I haven't seen Pit Stop, but I've been hearing about it for about a year now. And some other, okay, here I won't botch up too much more because now I'm reading right off your the press release. But you have returning is I mentioned earlier Shane Carruth, who made a film. It's been
Primer. Upstream Color is exquisite. I mean, it's so unique. He's got such a completely unique vision. It's gorgeous. It's so artistically satisfying. It was a film we saw early on, and we kind of internally were like, okay, the bar has been set. This is like film, you know, like this is where we're starting from this year. I mean, it's really very special and got a unique voice. The Festival Favorites category are for films. It's actually dominated by films that have come from Sundance. I referred to the 14
I see.
That we looked for earlier, and this is where most of them are.
Mm-hmm.
A couple are in 24 Beats, but most of them are Festival Favorites. And then Act of Killing and First Cousin Once Removed are from other festivals.
Yeah, I think.
Otherwise, it's actually, you know, the Sundance, the selections from Sundance that we're taking.
Yeah, First Cousin, you mentioned, I got to see at the New York Film Festival, I believe.
Yeah, Alan Berliner is a real favorite of the festival. He's been here with many of his films.
Oh, terrific.
You know, he does these beautiful, intimate works that are always, you know, it's really provocative and thoughtful and emotional.
Yeah, people are going to really love this one. It's very moving. And then another sort of southern boy is David Gordon Green, and he is returning with maybe a more character-driven film, Prince Avalanche.
It's great. Prince Avalanche is cool on so many levels. It's a performance. It's you haven't seen these actors in these roles before. And
mm-hmm.
It's very fresh. It's very different. And it's got, once again, what's interesting, all the Texas films have a completely unique voice to them, you know, whether it's Computer Chess or Prince Avalanche or Before Midnight, they're unmistakably their creators' stories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're all completely different. None of them are like the other ones at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're all incredibly well-realized. It's very exciting. It's wonderful to see. Prince Avalanche is completely original and works in a way that is just utterly its own. Really, it's terrific.
David, the arc of his career has been one to watch. It's been a very unusual.
What was funny about what David's been completely unusual. And what's interesting, I just got to know him in the last year. I didn't know him before that personally. Now he's living in Austin. And what's interesting was that last year we had like four films in the program that we'd accepted, you know, whatever, just random four films. And it turned out he'd executive produced all four of them. And
right.
I didn't realize that until we were doing the program book together. I mean, I had no idea. It was CJ and Run and
Compliance
and
the comedy. Was he? He was also on the comedy. I can't remember.
He might have been the comedy too. And then there was another one, and it was kind of like, it was kind of so great to see that kind of generosity. That they were films that, you know, he didn't help them get into the festival. They were films that we all disliked. But the idea that this is how he was spending some of his time and resources that he's been able to accumulate and kind of helping other filmmakers who've got distinct voices. It was really cool.
Right. Well, it also speaks. Yeah. Yeah. By all means, it also speaks to, like you described, your own programming approach to a way of a talent for identifying talent and then, you know, getting behind it. So he's obviously doing that. What do you make of some of the successes after your festival, which puts a number of films on the map, certainly gives a lot of filmmakers a good head start, ends up being up to them to where to go with it, I suppose. But when you see a film that that starts something like you mentioned, Compliance, or I saw Sea Girl Run last year at the festival, but I haven't seen it yet come up as far as a theatrical or some sort of distribution, unless I've missed it. That must be gratifying to see these success stories.
Yeah, sure. I mean, of course, you know, these are films we're all excited about, and we hope the world gets excited about them too. I mean, the world of you know, independent film distribution and exhibition is complex and difficult. It's, you know, there are too many films, not enough slots, too much divided attention, you know. I mean, it's a rare film that can... Yeah, I mean, it's hard to cut through the noise, but, you know, we want good things to happen for our films. I mean, last year, a film like Brooklyn Castle had a really kind of extraordinary way that it kind of connected with the world. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. It's not a simple picture.
Yeah.
It's not a simple process, and I'm not sure how to talk about it.
Well, what do you make of, you bring up a film like Brooklyn Castle. There seems to be this real strong through line between Austin and Brooklyn, huh? I say that living in Brooklyn
more interesting people, sure, why not? I mean, but you know, it's not the only place, but yeah.
I know,
sure.
No, not by a long shot.
No, there's a lot of creative, interesting people.
But some people, Michael Tully and Holly Herrick, for instance, just came from Brooklyn and now in Austin to the benefit of the Austin Film Society.
We're thrilled to have them here. I mean, Holly's just a fantastic addition to the Austin Film Society. I'm on the advisory board, and I was on the active board. Through, you know, I had a full term and then I was off the term. Now I'm on the advisory board. Holly's just a fantastic addition to the film community here. Thrilled to have her. And great to have Mike too, you know. But he's part of the whole North Carolina contingent with the David Gordon Green and
right.
Merritt Mader and Jeff Nichols. And, you know, it's sort of like the North Carolina crew are all relocated here.
It's
Danny McBride will come next. Who knows?
Well, with any luck, right? And he can bring Will Ferrell, and then it could get rather too big from that point on. Last thing, what do you think about in terms of the future of South by Southwest? Do you look to the future?
I'm not personally a visionary. My husband's a visionary. I'm kind of one foot in front of the other, kind of a person, day at a time, all the way.
Same here.
And
yeah,
I'm just trying to kind of like, you know, every year trying to keep the quality up and see how we can make things better. And I don't know how to think about it longer term than that. Certainly, I mean, the head of South by Southwest is a visionary, and he's always thinking about it all the time. You know, and this is it's become a really big organization, and there are a lot of challenges with that. But I don't know, you know, I don't know. I don't have any grandiose plans. I just really want to keep the quality up and have it be a place that is meaningful to people and that really works. For really talented people and audiences and kind of this, I think of it that creative combustion is what we're sort of looking for, you know? So I just have to look at it very much one day at a time.
What is this obsession you have with quality, Janet? For Pete's sake, let it go.
Yeah.
Or please do not. The South by Southwest Film Festival will be beginning on March the 8th and run through...
16th. The film part. The film runs March 8th to the 16th. We show movies
yes.
for 9 days.
Yes.
There are movies all 9 days. And it, you know, the flavor of the event varies enormously from there are different when the interactive conference is the first half, the music festival conference is the second half, and it's really, you know, it's a bunch of different events all in one, but it's all rich and interesting.
It is. I can't wait. You know, one thing I did want to, as a sidebar, and you don't have to answer it necessarily. I've heard through Michael Tully that the Alamo Draft House in South Austin is temporarily closed, and I was wondering sort of what venues or what...
Yeah, the Alamo South Lamar is under construction.
South Lamar, excuse me.
So, we used to use three screens there. So we've added a new screen called the Topfer, the Zach Scott Topfer, the Topfer Theater at the Zach Scott, which is nearby, and it's a beautiful theater. It's 400 seats, so it's kind of great. We haven't had that use of that before. We're using all of the Violet Crown, which is tiny but intimate and fantastic place to see movies. It's where all, you know, people go to see art movies these days. So we'll have four screens showing two movies there because they're micro cinemas. We use the Paramount, the Stateside, the Vimeo that we build in the Austin Convention Center, the Rollins. And so, you know, it's all kind of the same except we've added the Topfer, and we have satellite cinemas that we use, which are outside the downtown hub, more for the locals, for people with cars. We use the Alamo Slaughter Lane and the Alamo Village. And last year we had maybe three films a day. This year we're going to five. So we've increased them as well.
Very good. Well, Janet, thank you very kindly, and it was great to sort of quote-unquote meet you, and I will certainly I'll be there Friday, the 8th, and I'll introduce myself when I get there and say hello.
Right, sure.
Thank you for all this time. I know you're busy, so I'll let you get back to it. All right, thanks, Janet Pearson. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Lights come.